Welcome Policy Fellow at the South African Institute of Race Relations, Sarah Gon.
Good afternoon to you, Sarah. How are you doing this afternoon?
Hi. No, I'm good. And you, Simon?
Also good, thank you. I think we're going to have a hard and difficult conversation this afternoon. Mm-hmm. We're going to enter the very fraught territory of the use of the N-word in mm-hmm. South Africa. This, against the background of a very broken, very polarized society, and me seeing possibly 2 weeks ago now a video on social media of a mm-hmm. 16, 17-year-old girl singing with her friends lyrics to the song of Kendrick Lamar of Mad City, containing that word, being shamed on social media, being disciplined by her school, and who knows what she's capable of in a situation like that. I thought who better to talk to about this issue than yourself.
Right. Sorry, Simon, I just wanted to check. From what we spoke earlier, I think you said that she was singing and dancing that amongst her friends, if not all of
correct.
Them.
Correct. No, that's absolutely right. Friends, and many of them were black. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's disgraceful on two levels. One is that it's a reverse racism, and the other is that to be disciplined for it is actually outrageous. And in this situation, I think context is everything. She's a 16 or 17 year old girl. She's singing along with friends to the lyrics of a Kendrick Lamar song in which he uses the word. Now, I know that the word has very much been appropriated by American, black American rappers. In other words, it's sort of used instead of a pejorative sense, it's sort of owned as almost like a badge of honor, which in itself is not entirely unusual. But the point is here that you've got a 16 year old girl who may not, you know, who may barely be aware of the word, but even if she is, not in the context in which she's singing along with her other friends. And I mean, for the denizens of sort of racial purity to come down on her and chastise her because she's white for doing it, I think says more about them than it does about her. And it's very much a reflection of the times, and it's a sort of what they call almost the religion of anti-racism. But if you don't put context to it, and you don't look at intent, and you don't look at all the things that surround the occurrence, then you risk being guilty of what you accuse other people of doing to you.
No, I hear you loud and clear. It's just so interesting that we're not living in a world like that. This particular incident really concerned me, I think, because of the lack of intention, because mm-hmm. I don't think on any sort of legal, if you brought up a studying law, you understand it's all about intention. There has to be an intention to hurt. And I was talking to a very senior partner at one of the more prominent law firms in the city saying, relaying this incident and saying, well, it's not racist if there's no intention. And he looked at me and said, but is that in fact the case? And this is coming from a black guy. Mm-hmm. And suddenly for the first time I thought, well, maybe one can be racist without an intention. And that bothers me because I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah. Well, the thing is that I think he's probably right in extent, in the sense that if you know that the words you're uttering and the context in which you're uttering them can be taken that way, and it would be fairly common sense to most people, I would argue that, you know, there can certainly be degrees of intention or probably even no intention, and it just shows your attitude. But this is outrageous. And I'll tell you what's particularly interesting. I asked you, I wasn't interested in the name of the school, but I asked you whether it was a private, all-girls school, and you said it was both. Now, yes. I think that we have a problem in not necessarily only private, but monastic schools as a whole. And we've seen this happen in bishops in Cape Town, etc., where you have a burgeoning middle class, upper middle class, black kids going to school with parents who can afford to send them to school. And they are almost the sort of level of sort of hypocritical wokeness, it's almost like a sort of I don't know how to describe it, a sort of coconut guilt. It's a little bit like, you know, we've got to act as sort of guardians of what is racial and what is not and what should be done and what shouldn't. And particularly given the fact that so many young people in the country are at a disadvantage, which none of us can deny. But it seems to be very much, I'm not as aware of it happening in co-ed schools, either public or private. It seems to be that where the single-sexness of a school gives a sort of, absurd superiority complex. It's a combination of superiority on the one hand and inferiority on the other. And I think I think the problem is in the course of this debate, if we don't, as people who have another view or see something with more nuance, don't say it, then the only side of the story you're hearing is the side that is accusing.
Thing. What upsets me so much is this is such an indication of us just being so incredibly broken, and somewhere, somehow, the clever people need to put the pieces back together again, because this is not sustainable. This kind of attitude is not going to lead to a, harmonious society.
Exactly. I mean, can you imagine, I don't know what sort of support she has or hasn't received from friends at the school, or from other parents.
People are too scared to be seen to supporting her, so none is the answer.
I mean, she will probably have to leave the school. She's learned an awful lesson, and worse than that, I mean, Kendrick Lamar himself sort of criticized the white fan who jumped up on the stage to sing with him and sang the word. And he said, because she's white, she should have sort of bleeped the song as she sang it. I mean, that's actually an abuse of power. And
wow. Oh. That's food for thought. That's food for thought. Sorry, it's 4 minutes to 6. I want to play out with a song, but thank you as always.